Hello. Hi, everyone. My name is Josh, as Asha said. And today we're going to be talking about John 15, 1 through 17. And it's a pretty interesting passage for me, special passage, because I'm sure I read it, but then one day I didn't, and I was like, wait, God's friends with me. Like, God is actually my friend. And I just kept reading it, just kind of like, is this true? And it just kind of struck me. I don't know if I'd read it before, but something about it then, it mattered that I was a friend to God, that I knew that I could claim that as my own. So I wanted us to start off today just by reading the passage together. We did this last spring, I think, for one of our talks, but I just wanted us to do that together. So it's John 15, 1 through 17, and I'll mute myself.
So let's read it aloud. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit. Because apart from me, you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me, and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit, and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you, and that your joy may be complete. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because a servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you, and I appointed you to go and bear fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. I'm giving you these commands so that you may love one another.
So that text, I think, raises a lot of questions as much as it gives us like the promise of friendship. Like, there's questions about branches and things being burned and just things going on. We don't know exactly what it means. And this just isn't like sort of one text that might be a little bit confusing. This is in the context of a lot of stuff happening, and I'll kind of explain some of that. So what does it even mean to be a friend of God? I think there's a question, do we feel that way about God, that God is our friend, that we're actually walking with God every step of the day? Are we still working out the realness of God? And if there is a God, do we think that God is even concerned with us? And why would God, an all-powerful being, choose to be our friend? It's interesting because if some of our neighbors don't befriend us, if some of our coworkers don't befriend us, if some of our family even doesn't befriend us, then why would God? But there's a question of looking at it through a human framework, through looking at the actions of humans to see, would this God actually be our friend? If there was this truth out there, wouldn't we want the truth to shine on our lives? And wouldn't we protest truth just being a fault finder, someone that just says this is what's wrong or this is what needs to be changed, but actually want that truth to deal with us with love and care, a truth with grace? And this would include everyday realities of friendship, walking alongside each other, laughing, having a deep interest in each other's lives, sacrificial service, and an identification of gifts and talents that can be used for the betterment of all. Do we have these types of friends? Friendships characterized by a love that never fails? And do we live in a world that welcomes strangers as friends? Do we live in a world that sees peace and reconciliation created through just people, not even systems or structures, but people that would just say, hey, it should be this way. Do we see that, or do we see a different type of world? This would be a love that's not mean, not impatient, not proud or picky or jealous, and not domineering. It would be a love that would be real and that would remain. This is what the passage today offers, friendship with God. As we keep talking about each week in this series, we're in a long series about Jesus and the kingdom of God and the way that is breaking through in our world and kind of seeing what does it have for us? What does this mean? Todd taught last week on this kingdom, a new way of seeing the world and seeing that world as both, seeing it as not yet, but also now. And Jesus does say, repent, the kingdom of heaven is near, at the beginning of his own ministry. In this kingdom, we have seen Jesus welcome the unlikely, the outsiders. We have seen him raise people from the dead and also cast out demons. We have seen him teach about the nature of this kingdom through sermons and parables, revealing that God's forgiveness and God's rewards are everyone's and that we share them. And we also kind of get a sense that if something's good, then we should be sharing it anyways. Jesus seems to teach us things, but then also teach us that this stuff makes sense. It's not extra rules, but it's actually a way that the world seems to work and seems to work well. Our text today, the one that we read aloud, comes from the Gospel account of John, and that's just a book about Jesus' ministry. It's one of the ones that was written later, and it's a little bit more mysterious, a little bit more complicated. And a few chapters before in this text, we find out that people have noticed Jesus' life and ministry. We've seen people kind of react before with praise, with celebration, but there's also people that are reacting negatively. And I think Ryan's talk really kind of got at this, that there's not just a positive reaction to the kingdom growing, but there's resistance. And it's not just a resistance that's from the outside. Sometimes I think we see that resistance from within. What are we unwilling to do? What are we unwilling to sacrifice? In this case, it seems that religious officials in Israel aren't really willing to sacrifice sort of their majority or their stake in saying this is how the world works. They have kind of a selfishness about saying this is what we know and this is what we're going to stick to. And Jesus totally breaks all of that. So there's something they can't accept there. Their fear in some ways might have been legitimate, that Jesus would cause the Roman Empire to further oppress these Jewish lands that the Roman Empire was occupying. And as this controversy is rising, the Passover, a holiday commemorating the Exodus, a Jewish celebration of freedom, is occurring. Jesus and his disciples gather in Jerusalem for this holiday, and they ate what was called the Last Supper, just a meal where they spent time with one another before Jesus' arrest and before his crucifixion. It's on this night that these conversations are taking place between wherever the Last Supper was at, and then the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prayed. These are Jesus' last words and also his notes of preparation for his disciples. And that's where we find ourselves. Jesus says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine grower. He removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit, he prunes to make it bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. So Jesus said a lot of things already on this night, and I don't know exactly what the disciples' reaction was. We know that they had wine at the Last Supper, so maybe Jesus is indulging a little bit. Maybe there's something just about this night that just makes Jesus want to reveal secrets. But Jesus is speaking in metaphors here. If you're one of the disciples, you might be comparing sort of this word with what Jesus has done already. Jesus seems to be making a claim here. And this is one of the tensions in Jesus' ministry. Just exactly who is this Jesus? And what is he saying? Like, what are these things that he's talking about? Jesus has borne fruit in people's lives. He has changed people. He's healed them. Cities have been transformed. Cities kind of shout about Jesus' good news, and they seem to change after that. Structures of power have been overturned through even just language. Jesus calling something a kingdom when that's what the Roman Empire is also called. And the disciples probably see Jesus something like the moral weight of the universe. It seems that what Jesus cares about is a way the universe is working. It's a way it's going. And the disciples seem to follow that, walk alongside, and see this moral weight of the universe overturn every other system, every other structure. Jesus seems to be sort of the way. And it's as if Jesus caught all the meaning in the universe in his hand and then walked in authority with it, just releasing it to everyone he saw, clean, unclean, woman, man, Jew, and Gentile. This isn't the first time Jesus makes a statement about his identity in John. This is actually the 7th out of 7. Before this, Jesus has said, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall not hunger. I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in the darkness, but shall have the light of life. I am the gate. If anyone enters through me, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out and find pasture. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me shall live, even if he dies. I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." Jesus moves from talking about resurrection and life in these last two to living abundantly in Jesus. It seems that the vineyard is a metaphor for growth. It's a metaphor for what Jesus is doing in this world. It's not just that Jesus dies and then is raised again, even in his statements here. It's that something seems to be birthed. And in this sense, from what we've read, it seems to be about us too. We get to participate in this resurrection. And while I think the disciples have seen the statement come true in their time with Jesus, I think we here now can see this text as an offer for us. It's an offer for a meaningful life. And this is Jesus' offer for a life that is always advancing, always growing, and always becoming more fruitful. No matter where we are, there seems to be a way that God is still interested in us. God still desires us. God still wants to draw us near into relationship with him. And I want to make one thing clear from the outset. This is not Jesus making an argument for cultural Christianity. That did not even exist at this time. It's not Jesus making an offer about religion. We see a lot of these exclusive, like, "I am" statements about Jesus, often used for organizations, churches, just systems. But this isn't about those things. Jesus says, "I am." This is about the person of Jesus. Jesus is talking to anyone, regardless of their religion, regardless of their background, or any other identity marker. These are Jesus' sincere words to his disciples and to all who hear this message. And here, in this community, we usually like to talk about this sort of concept as a centered set concept. We've seen the graph a lot, so I didn't want to repeat it again. I used a different image of Jesus at the top and then other people. Here, distance is just a metaphor. I don't really think the people that are down below might not get Jesus. And in the centered set, that positioning is different anyway. But there's a sense that Jesus is present and Jesus is real, and he's calling us into a relationship with him. And no matter where people are, they can see Jesus. They can see these offers, no matter what categories they belong to, whether you think this person would be a Christian or not. And they can be drawn to him. And I think these are how we should kind of take these statements of identity that Jesus is making. It's to anyone. And it's not like one of us can sort of have claim over that because we follow Jesus. They're just statements about himself that we can choose to sort of square with in terms of our life and what we are kind of thinking and moving through. So what is Jesus really saying here? I think it's kind of speaking to the way things are in the world. And I think one of the other places where we see that is the book of Genesis. And this kind of just goes to Matt's talk on authority. It says, "Then God said, 'Let us make humankind in our image, after our likeness, so they may rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the cattle and over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move on the earth.' God created humankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Jesus doesn't speak about this reality. He doesn't speak about sort of perfect way the world existed, one where God treated people, humans, with love and care, and in turn, they treated creation with that same love and care. There was a break in the moment of the fall. So Jesus really can't speak about that model. So we see Jesus speaking in a different way about sort of the way the world works. We see Jesus speaking about this vineyard, about this place where growth happens. We see that it's a place where no matter sort of clean or unclean, you can come in, you can be welcomed. And they're all cleansed by Jesus. And in the text, it says that Jesus' words make them clean. It's not even his death that hasn't happened yet, but his presence is cleansing. Wholeness, freedom, righteousness, these are not just strivings with Jesus, but they're achieved possibilities. And according to Jesus, this is just simply achieved by letting the gardener take care of us. To prune a grapevine, you actually lift it up. That's all it is. We kind of might have an image of a huge, like, kind of big scissor cut, and kind of just a way that that could be a violent image. But actually, to prune just means to lift. It means to take it from the ground where it's dirty, to brush it off, to cleanse it, and to raise it, to make it higher, to make it so animals can't really get at it. It's protected now. It's in a safe place. And as it says in the passage, the gardener isn't interested in just who is sort of in or out. The gardener is in it for growth. He's in it to see sort of things magnified and things developed. So everyone has this process going on. The people who are remaining get pruned, and the people who aren't, it seems that there's a process of removal, and I think a start again for something to take place. I think Jesus wants us to have a solid foundation. I'm the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me, you can do nothing. Whoever does not abide in me is thrown away like a branch and withers. Such branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask for whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and become my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. I have said these things to you so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be made complete. So I think one of the questions we might have is, what does this burning look like? It's a strong image. I think there's a question of, is this permanent? Is it temporary? Is it an image of hell? But I wanted to talk about kind of my own experience with this, my own way that I am familiar with this process of burning. And we talk about refining, but sometimes we also just talk about kind of deadness. We talk about what it feels like not to remain in something that's safe, in something that is protective. And I talked about last time sort of the process of growing up, just how others would interact with me in a way that I think really caused me to feel lonely and caused me to feel suffering. It made me wonder if I'd have friends, if I'd be in community, if I wasn't in a community, if I would mean anything to it. But unfortunately, broken people aren't kept from breaking more things. And even as I talked with Jesus and I held on to the hope of something better, I think I kept Jesus' kingdom as something for later and not for now. I'm not sure if that's because I associated Jesus' kingdom with college. That's kind of a silly thing to do. But I just felt there was something that was too hard, it was too difficult, and I just let hope kind of take over. I'll just hope for something better. But I didn't see anything as possible for today. And I'm not sure if any of us feel that way too, that there's something we're waiting for life to start. Well, I think Jesus' text is about all the time. And that's a challenge to us. How will Jesus change that? How will Jesus sort of come near to us? So we can see this is something that's happening now. And I hope right now that Jesus is doing that for each of us, that we're feeling the Spirit's presence just drawing us to him. If that isn't happening, I just kind of want to ask us just to cry out for that, just to cry out for God to come near to us. I don't think I did that enough during my time of suffering, and I hope that in our times of just feeling distant, we can do that just here, even in the middle of a talk. The last 2 years of high school, for me, were some of the toughest. It was a time of just numbness. I would, if I even got to school early, I would just kind of wait in my car until like 7:57, not really wanting to go inside, not wanting to talk with anyone, and then just would go make my way and live life, you know, doing well in classes, but not really engaged, or maybe even desiring to be engaged, but having blocks there all the time. I would just sit waiting for minutes to pass at lunch, just on the clock, just waiting for the sort of time just to be over. People weren't talking about anything. It was meaningless. I'm not sure if people felt being in a meaningless conversation, but it just seems like that time takes forever for it to go by, and we just want it to be done so much. And it's not the type of meaningless that comes from awkward conversations. Awkward conversations are different. There can be some engagement there. There can be some thoughts that happen there. These aren't awkward conversations. These are conversations just of misery, just of wanting this just to be over. It's just how I felt almost every day at lunch. Sometimes I would make that into a prayer, but other times I wouldn't. And even I think if it was a prayer, it wasn't necessarily a prayer of rescue, but more just like, listen to me, Jesus. Listen to me tell you about these things. And I rushed home at the end of the day, just jealous for my home, my bedroom, just things I could call a refuge. I was making memories, but a lot of these things felt meaningless, sort of darkness or just a kind of, an unlit presence was the norm. And even if moments of joy and love broke through, it seemed to be that they were all sort of the way things should be, or they were all a dream or a fantasy. And like, I have a great family, so that happened a lot. But for some reason, there was a lie that said, this is just temporary, or this is just now, but it's not the way that it will always be. It's not how life can be. There wasn't a consistency to it, and I could never really get in it. It was more just something that I was dreaming about, even if I was living it out. Something was stolen from me there. And I think the best way to put it is, I let Jesus put me on life support, but I didn't let him transform my life. It was like I was keeping this truth under my bed instead of letting it be my blanket and cover me, letting us, Jesus and me, become one. Instead, I was burning away, just believing these lies. I was bored with life, and my pain blinded me so much that I could not really see the need of others. That wasn't even really part of my reality. Even if I was a good person on the outside, as many people saw me, I felt dead on the inside when confronted with the reality presented before me. And I might have subscribed to Christianity, I might have preferred Jesus over anything else as a response to a question, and I might have followed Jesus like some in the crowd followed Jesus, but I don't think I was truly with him. And I think that's why the sort of ideas of following Jesus or seeing Jesus as something to be drawn to is important, because sometimes labels can be lies. Sometimes preferences cannot indicate reality. Sometimes we can want something as a name, but not want it as an experience. Cannot want it as true. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about here. When there's growth, there's truth. When there's a presence of what someone does, there is fellowship. Jesus is calling us to remain in what he's doing, abiding in his presence of love, because then he knows that there is a friendship there, that there's communion there. Something is happening, we're not apart. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because a servant does not know what the master is doing. I have called you friends, because I have made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father. You did not choose me, but I chose you. And I appointed you to go and bear fruit, fruit that will last, so that the Father will give you whatever you ask in my name. I'm giving you these commands so that you may love one another. I do not call you servants any longer, because a servant does not know what the master is doing. But he's called us friends. And he's called us friends, it seems, because of the sacrifice that he's made. What have we really done to obey? What have the disciples done to obey? If you just flip back a few pages, Philip says, what's your relationship with the Father? Asking Jesus that question. Philip, just maybe a little bit clueless there. Peter, getting told that he would deny Christ 3 times. What did they do to obey? They followed him. They stuck with him. They were a presence by his side. But there wasn't perfection there. And we know that. And we know that there wasn't really perfection afterwards. But there seemed to be a presence afterwards. There was remaining afterwards. There was love that was combined afterwards. What do we know that the rest of human history before Jesus didn't know? I think the moment is the cross and obedience and the resurrection, God's power. Through that knowledge, we sort of have the keys. We have access. And that's access to knowing that Jesus actually does call us friends, that he has sort of made the first step, if you want to say that. He's sort of taken that leap to us. And I think he's waiting for us to take that leap to him. And if we have taken that leap, to continue leaping, to continue just going with him until we're flying, until we are together, always. And this is what drew me back, a persistent friendship with Jesus, where Jesus drew me in. He made me see my life for what it was. And that wasn't a bad thing. That was just honesty. That was grace. He showed me what I valued at the time, what was growing and what was dead in my garden. And more than anything, he showed me himself, and I saw that everything I ever wanted was in him, was in this presence of Jesus. My gifts, my talents, sort of my dreams, my passions, everything could be found there. And not just found, but perfected. It could be walked out. It was actually possible. The way God sees us is who we are. And that is all we are, truly. Everything else is our own fiction. It's just our own imagination, a way the world might see us, a way that others might see us. But all those things will burn away. But Jesus' truth about us will remain. Jesus changes everything here by calling us friends. And even though Jesus says that we are his friends if we obey, I think Jesus already calls us friends through his act of obedience. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. This is what he did for us. And Jesus calls people friends before this moment. If you read through the text of John and read through the other gospels, he calls his disciples friends, he calls people he heals friends, and he even calls Judas, his betrayer, a friend. And knowing Jesus, I don't think that was insincere. I think that was actually Jesus' love, his radical love that says to the person who would betray him to set up a situation where he would become on the cross, to say, you are still my friend. And I think that's the love that Jesus wants inside of us. He wants us to be that courageous and that obedient, that we would say that to even the one who might kill us, might kill one of our loved ones. He's patient. He waited for me, even though I already knew his name, this name of Jesus, even though I already prayed to him, and even though I used Jesus as a way of life, a strength, support, comfort. And here in this text, we hear that same Jesus say, abide. Abide in this body that brings the kingdom in joy and in love, but also abide in this body which gets whipped, maimed, and crucified. Abide in all that I am, in all that I have to offer, and all that I will ever be, because I am here for you, and I am yours. Remain in all of that. Choose it. What does this mean for us? I think it means that we have to sincerely choose whether or not we want to join the life-giving weight of the universe, begin the work of redeeming ourselves in our own lives, our families, our cities, and this world. And we do it through a kingdom that breaks in through friendship, through just a simple, how are you? What's going on? That's the way that in home group, we sort of started our conversation with God, just writing it down. What do you think God is saying to you? How do you think a God that loves you would speak to you? How do you think a God that wouldn't condemn you, wouldn't make you feel guilty, wouldn't bring you shame, speak to you? Just start there. How would that God speak to you right now? It's easy to ask for that friendship to be reconciled, to be strengthened, and to be started. We just cry out. And yes, it means we become followers, but it also means we are people who remain and let that gentle lifting of the gardener occur, letting us see where we might be getting dirty, letting us see who we might be hurting, letting us see who we are through the eyes of God. And for our community at Elm City Vineyard, it might mean simply to rest, simply taking the time not to gain, but to remain. It means looking at our lives as marathons and not as races. It means making sure we have a right view of God. One is a supporter and a friend who is not a harsh disciplinarian or a distant observer of our lives, but someone who is intensely interested in making us produce vineyards, making us produce growth, making us be obedient in the way that Jesus was obedient, an obedience that brings love and friendship, but also is not unfamiliar to sacrifice. It might also look like us asking God questions as we rest, questions that we might not have even thought we could ask God, things that we thought we didn't even have permission to do, things that would help our lives because we would know what the God of the universe thinks about us, not just other people. What am I made to do, God? What about me brings you happiness and brings you joy? How am I made to be a being to worship you? How can I spread this message of good news sincerely? And ultimately, it means to know whose we are. We are God's beloved. And through Jesus, that God wants to participate in our lives in all ways. So let's let his kingdom break through in friendship and in love. And as we enter into a time of communion, let us invite him into our hearts and simply remain and abide in the presence of God. The presence of God that we see is here and now. The presence of God that is within us. Let us become hungry for it, desire it, and to see it transform and change everything.